All right, so continuing on with our discussions here at Great YAL 2012, we're with Peter Moskowitz. We're going to talk about modern web programming. Tell us a little bit about yourself to start off.
I am Kazing's developer evangelist. Kazing is a startup in Mountain View in sunny California.
Nice.
And we are building web communications platform software. Mm. We are in the business of building an enterprise-grade, high-performance WebSocket server.
Excellent. So why don't we take us a little bit here for people who may not know what WebSockets are. There may not be many of you out there, but tell us a little bit about WebSockets to begin.
So WebSocket is part of the bigger HTML5 umbrella. The main promise of HTML5 was to provide a programming model and an environment for developers to build full-blown, full-featured applications in the browser without the need of plugins. Mm. So initially, along or part of the HTML5 standard, and then after that, as a separate standard, WebSocket was developed and proposed. And what WebSocket allows you to do is create a full duplex connectivity between your browser or your WebSocket client and your server.
Okay.
And by having this full duplex connectivity, you can have a very low latency, very efficient way of communicating between your browser and your WebSocket server. With other words, WebSocket is the TCP for the web.
Interesting. Very interesting. And what are some canonical examples of where that's a good thing?
So there are a couple of types of applications that you can build very efficiently with WebSockets. One of them is where you have a lot of data available on the server that you would like to publish to a large number of clients. A typical example for this would be trading and betting kinds of applications. Hmm. You want to build a foreign exchange or some sort of a stock trading application. You want to extend the reach of your data from the intranet all the way to the browser. And it can be done in a very, very efficient way to hundreds of thousands or even millions of users with extremely low latency.
Interesting.
The other type of application that you can build is, given that the latency is very low, is where instead of having the data available on the server, you have some data available on a client that you want to send to another client. That allows you to build these peer-to-peer kinds of experiences and applications. So one typical example for that would be gaming, where you have, let's say, a remote control that you want to use to control your race car or your spaceship. Another one is when people are playing against each other. So WebSocket can play this role of connecting these devices through a WebSocket server.
So could you have a case where you had WebSocket servers on clients such that I could have two devices, I could have one device be a server and one device be the client, and they attach that way?
So what is a typical use case is that servers are talking to servers. Mm. That is more of a common use case. WebSocket servers are connected. For clients, it's primarily the peer-to-peer use case.
Understood. So let's talk about the server-to-server case. So in that sense, that's going to be, you have a server, I make a request, I build one of these channels with a server, I'm a client app. That server then goes and calls other servers through right. these channels to do some sort of computation or database lookup, whatever.
Right. So the way you are building web applications in this world is slightly different than how you are building applications these days. Basically, the way we are building web apps today is that you have an application server or a middleware where the request arrives from the browser, and then this application server or middleware makes a request to the backend server, creates some markup in a dynamic fashion, and then returns that markup to the browser. So this builds on the notion of the browser being able to render HTML pages. The actual power of HTML5 is that now we can run JavaScript very efficiently in the browser, and that allows us to actually deploy applications onto the browser. Mm. And with the power of WebSocket, you have the ability to speak from the browser to the server and from the server to the browser directly in a very efficient way. So what this means is that basically you can take your code that's running on the middleware or on the application server or a significant portion of that, and run it in the client. And what this gives you is the ability to scale out in a way, more efficient way. Basically, you don't have to scale out your application server or the middleware as your user population is growing because you are running your application code in the browser. Now,
that's fine.
I guess that's all I wanted to say about
that. That's fine.
Sorry about this.
No worries, man. So, but I want to talk about that. So what I'm hearing is that the browser is essentially, you know, we used to have this notion of a smart client, where most of the computation, of course, would happen on the client. You take advantage of the resources that are on most machines, even small devices these days,
right?
Which is a powerful CPU, powerful GPU, fair amount of memory, not a lot on the mobile case, but enough. Right. And then you would just make sort of lightweight transactional interaction with these servers. With this, my question is, how tightly coupled is the client to its WebSocket server through this channel instance? I'm assuming it's like an instance of a connection.
Exactly.
And how coupled is that?
So you basically have this permanent connection.
Okay.
This connection gets established when the browser so decides. So the browser makes actually an HTTP request to the server that now I want to create a WebSocket connection. And then the server responds that, okay, I'm ready to speak WebSocket. This is called the WebSocket handshake.
Okay.
And after this initial HTTP request, a permanent connection takes the place of the HTTP connection.
Okay.
That uses the same port as HTTP.
So
or
port 80.
HTTPS.
Okay.
Yes. So very much like WebSocket, very much like HTTP, WebSocket has a secure counterpart, port 80, port 443.
Okay.
The beauty of this is that it allows, it plays well with the existing network infrastructure, the existing firewalls and routers and proxies.
Okay, but it's not HTTP, it's TCP.
Exactly.
That's the protocol.
It's protocol over TCP.
Excellent, which is of course pretty highly efficient.
Yes. One more thing I wanted to add is that when you are building an application that uses TCP, you're building a networked application. And let's say that's a presence and instant messaging kind of application, or maybe it's an email application. You as a developer would not go against the TCP programming, against TCP APIs. You would use higher level, richer business protocols to build these kinds of applications. So in the world of TCP, we came up with these protocols. And what is very important is that WebSocket was designed to support these kinds of protocols and APIs as well. The WebSocket standard calls this sub-protocols. So for example, if you are building a browser-based chat application, then there are libraries out there and there are products out there that allow you to use the XMPP notion, XMPP protocol in your browser to build these applications. So in JavaScript, actually, you are coding against XMPP. Or if you are building an email application, you can code against IMAP or POP or SMTP to build these applications. And this is very popular with our customers, partly because they want to build these very specific applications in the browser, and it improves their productivity big time. But also because many of the enterprises have already existing infrastructure. Very often they have messaging or enterprise messaging systems that use messaging APIs like JMS. So another thing that you can do is provide JMS APIs in the browser in JavaScript. And when you do so, then you can take advantage of all the capabilities that JMS has. So basically you can implement a pub-sub kind of a discussion between your application running in the browser and your JMS infrastructure in the back end.
Interesting. So I want to talk a little bit about what goes on the server. So servers, the cool thing about servers is you have sort of a potentially, I hate to use the term limitless, but in this age of cloud computing and computing as a service, it might often be a good idea to do computation in the cloud, right? Especially if you have big data that's already there and you can operate slightly closer to that data. In this new modern world we're talking about here, you know, I'm just curious as to where what WebSockets buys me in that scenario where I want to send a command
right
to this to the cloud
right.
to do some work
right.
and send me a result.
Right. So one way of looking at this world is it's actually very similar to how we used to build client-server applications. Because what it does is moving the application code from the middle tier, from the middleware application server node to the client. From the server's perspective, the browser is just another client. So you could build JDBC on top of WebSocket and then become the client of the database. Mm. And from the database's perspective, you are just another JDBC client. Or if you are building integration with an existing ERP system, then you can do it in a similar fashion. Mm. The way the communication is happening is that in the browser, you are speaking typically from a JavaScript script context that protocol that your backend is using. And then the role of the WebSocket server, sometimes called the WebSocket gateway, is to translate that special, let's say, JDBC over WebSocket to JDBC over TCP. Mm. And basically, you are unloading the responsibilities of the dynamic rendering, and you can focus on additional middleware functionality in a lighter weight fashion.
Excellent. Now, what about using these WebSockets in outside of the browser?
Very good question. We have many clients who are interested in building desktop applications, but they want to do this in a future-proof manner because they know that they are moving towards HTML5. At the same time, they have Windows clients, so they need to build .NET applications. So what my company, Kazing, does is it provides a number of different APIs and a number of different languages that we support. So we support .NET, Java, to build applications. Mm. So very often these applications are JavaFX kind of applications, some other are desktop applications. And then the beauty of this is that your web clients can then very easily interoperate with your desktop clients through the WebSocket server.
Interesting. Yes, I can see that. So that actually brings up an interesting point. Yes, it does enable this cross-application communication, but you go to the server first.
Exactly.
As opposed
to the WebSocket standard doesn't define peer-to-peer connectivity. Mm. If you want to speak to another client, then you are best off probably using some messaging software, mm. and that allows you to create a one-to-one or a one-to-many kind of a connection, a topic or a queue in messaging terms, and then speak to other clients that way.
Excellent. So let's continue on, talk a little bit more about this modern web programming world that's not here today,
right.
but it's coming tomorrow. Now, one of the things about WebSockets is it's an evolving standard, yes?
Actually, it was ratified in December 2011.
Okay.
WebSocket is controlled by two standards bodies. One is responsible for the actual protocol, the bits and bytes that are traveling over the wire, mm. and the other one is responsible for the WebSocket API. So IETF is the first one and W3C is the latter. And but WebSocket was designed, the protocol itself, to support any number of languages. So there is a new JSR in the Java world, JSR 356, that is in the works to define the Java API for WebSockets.
Mm. Excellent. So what is a next generation web application?
So let me give you an example, and that will help us a little understand. So we do have a demo that you can check out on the Kazing website where we render a race car in the browser. Mm. This race car is a very nicely rendered, shiny 3D Formula One car. We could not have rendered images like this or cars like this even 5 years ago, but thanks to the hardware acceleration, it's really nice in WebGL. And then you can control this car and drive it around using your keyboard. And what you can do is you can take your phone and you can become the client of the same WebSocket server that this race car application is connecting to. And by doing so, you can send commands from your phone to drive the car. Hmm. So one interesting way of doing these commands, and that kind of showcases the power of HTML5, is by detecting the tilt status of your phone. So if you are tilting your phone forward, then you can send messages through the WebSocket server to the race car application that the car should move forward, left and right, and backwards. So it's a very, very neat way. And if you think about this, this is not an application or not an environment where you are generating web pages or websites. You have apps running both in the desktop browser as well as on the mobile phone. You download the actual application in the form of static HTML files, JavaScript, and images. And after the initial download of the actual application, you have this low latency WebSocket connection through which you can communicate back and forth.
Hmm.
Another interesting example is a light table demo where you have images on a screen. And you can move the images around in the screen. And then you can open the same page from another browser. Let's say you have a browser that's a tablet, another browser that's a desktop. And as you are making changes in one DOM structure, you can reflect those changes in the other one. That allows you to build these collaborative kinds of applications that are real-time in nature. So maybe you are resizing and setting up the layout of the images in one corner of this page, and I'm doing the same in another corner. Mm. So it's another very interesting use case.
Absolutely. So you mentioned that this scales very well. So if I have a popular website that implements or employs WebSockets,
right,
and for some reason it becomes unbelievably popular on some day, say it's an election or who knows what it is, how well does this technology scale?
So let me give you an example. A couple of weeks ago, we published a white paper about benchmark results that we have done with the Kazing WebSocket Gateway. And what we have learned is the following. We could create parallel connections to more than a million users using one Dell server. The message that we were sending was 512 bytes plus the protocol overhead, so it was closer to 700 bytes. And the latency of the messages, the average latency, was 3.5 milliseconds.
Hmm.
So that is a very different kind of set of capabilities that are available to you today to build web applications.
Interesting. And so continuing on, what other sort of future-ish kind of things can we see here?
There is a trend to basically use this kind of technology in your living room. So moving on from gaming, probably the most common thing you do in the living room is you watch TV.
Mm.
And as you are watching TV, there are these interactive shows where you can send text messages to express your vote or your preference one way or another. There are companies that are building second screen experiences. That means that while you're watching the TV show or a live sports event, you can have your tablet or your phone in front of you, and not only can you follow what's happening in the other match or in the other game that's going on at the same time, but you can also interact with other viewers as well as with some sort of server logic. So let's say there is a penalty kick in soccer, and then you have approximately 30 seconds to vote whether you think that the player is going to score a goal or not. And this brings a very different kind of experience to the living room. In the past, you would probably have done some quick Google search to find out more about the actress that you really like in a movie. Mm-hmm. Now, as the movies is streamed to you, you can get that second screen additional kind of information dynamically on your device. And a permanent low latency connection is ideal for these kinds of applications.
So in the case where you have a lot of data going through the pipe, going through the channel, how does that scale?
We have demonstrations where we have a portfolio for an exchange applications on our website where we can pump up the message rate to hundreds of messages per second.
Mm.
And we are using some default Amazon instances, and we don't see any issues or any problems. So you can reach hundreds or even thousands of messages and process them in the browser. Basically, very often, the actual bandwidth is not on the server side or on a WebSocket side. Very often, it's in the browser, how many messages it can process and it can digest.
Excellent. Now, in this world that we live in, it's highly asynchronous because you never want to block UI. So can you dynamically create these channels in the background and then like get rid of it?
Yeah, so there are a number of JavaScript libraries that you can use to build these kinds of applications. Mm-hmm. The challenge that we see is that most JavaScript libraries that we use today and that are available today are counting on the limitations and take into consideration the limitations of HTTP. So the way to achieve a rich experience that WebSocket provides you naturally in the world of HTTP is doing polling and long polling and doing these AJAX and COMET kinds of solutions. But there are libraries out there that started providing UI libraries that started providing WebSocket capabilities as well.
So how long does the channel last? So I would assume that if the user navigates away from a page, the server obviously will know that and the channel's gone.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the server's responsibility to detect that the browser got closed or the user navigated away or even the browser crashed. Hmm. Basically what WebSocket provides you as the web developer is an event-driven API. So if for some reason, let's say the server closes the connection, or you have a mobile application where you are in a tunnel and your connection closes, your application can detect these events and can react to them. So one interesting example is where your connection gets closed for one reason or another. The WebSocket standard doesn't define how to reconnect and what to do. It's left for higher level protocols to take care of that. So this is one possible added value that, let's say, JMS can add on top of this.
Interesting. So a lot of people are used to refreshing a page to update content. If you refresh a page that's connected to a WebSocket server,
right,
the server's like, the page is gone, the connection is dead, it has to spin up a new one when the page comes back.
Exactly.
Or is there some sort of, okay. So the way that you as a developer should be thinking about programming in this modern world would be pages that are always up to date. They update themselves.
Yes.
Today we do that in the background with AJAX, but that can be a little clumsy.
Right. So the way we are building apps these days is more based on a notion of a snapshot that you have on the server side. So by the time you render your page, you take a snapshot of the server side state or your application, and that's what you display. In this new world, the expectation is that the server is notifying the client that, hey, something has changed, and the client can reflect that right away. So you don't have to make a, hey, give me, let's say, the state of the shopping cart. And then you display the state of the shopping cart and you don't see any update until you refresh the page. If you have a shared shopping cart experience with your spouse and your spouse is adding something to the shopping cart, it would show up right away in your browser.
So if I had a situation where I wanted to, and I'm not in the browser anymore, now I'm in in this modern world, we also have apps that aren't web apps. In other words,
right,
they're not web pages hosted in a virtual machine like a
yeah,
browser. So they say they're native apps, native client apps. Is there a way that I could have a background updating service that connects through WebSockets to a web server, and I have my app here, and what it's doing in the background is updating the cache such that the things in front of me start changing and it's an always up-to-date app, and then that stays in place until I physically close the app. The other thing I would ask you is, in the modern world, in this scenario, you have the capability to suspend apps. If it's on even in iOS or Windows 8 or wherever, when you leave an app, unless you actually kill the process or the system kills the process, it gets frozen, snapshot. When you come back, it's alive again. So I kind of wonder how that world would work.
Absolutely. So to this latter question, especially in the mobile world, it happens more often than not that you may want to suspend your application, or it just gets suspended because of your reception. Not only that, you also have to be cognizant of the bandwidth that you have. You have to be aware of the battery usage of your mobile device. So being able to speed up and speed down the level of basically the amount of data that you are sending back and forth is absolutely critical. And then integrating with these messaging, the way you can send messages to mobile devices, and then that way basically resurrect the WebSocket connection is another important capability.
And what does the resurrection of a WebSocket connection mean to the WebSocket server?
So let me give you an example. You are building an application that allows the user to get live updates about flight information. You're at an airport and you want to know what's happening with your flight. And then eventually your phone goes to sleep and it disconnects, shuts down the connection to preserve battery life. And then at that point, if it's an Apple device, you can receive an APNS message. And that message that shows up as a badge over your icon, the user gets notified that, hey, the application has something to tell you. You can start up the application as a UI gesture on the phone, and that allows the application to reinitiate the WebSocket connection and negotiate the server, the state where the application that the application was in, and allows the server to update the client again and restore the live WebSocket connection at that point.
Interesting. So is the server maintaining state?
So the server can, if there is no live WebSocket connection to a certain client, then it can choose alternative channels to notify the client, yes.
Excellent. Very, very interesting. It is a modern web, man.
Absolutely.
And also for people who aren't web developers that want to, establish these types of channels and connections with services is pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, we have many clients who use Flash, who use Java or .NET applications, and they are jumping on this because they see that this is a way, while maintaining their existing investment in infrastructure, they can move on to something that is up and coming.
Awesome, which is HTML5.
Exactly.
Right on. Well, hey, great to meet you.
Very nice to meet you.
And thanks for coming on Channel 9.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Sure. Cheers.
Thanks.